imagine scrolling through Twitter, just your normal feed, and suddenly you see a video of a robot perfectly folding laundry. I mean, right in the middle of a messy San Francisco living room.
Yeah, and this was back in December 2025. It wasn't just folding clothes either. This machine was making breakfast, it was organizing the guy's schedule, and it was actually holding a real conversation with him.
Right. And your first thought as a viewer is probably, okay, this is some multi-million dollar prototype from a super secretive tech lab somewhere. And then your second thought is, well, I will never, ever be able to afford that in my lifetime.
Exactly. But then the guy who posted it, this 28-year-old programmer named Alex Dom, he drops an absolute bombshell on everyone. He built that entire robot himself for just $1,200.
Which is just, I mean, it's mind-blowing.
It is. And the brain running the whole operation. It was powered by an AI model called Claude 3.5 Sonnet, and it was only costing him a measly $40 a month to run.
It's basically the cost of a gym membership to have a robotic butler. And that video, I mean, it completely changed the game. It racked up something like 15 million views in just 48 hours.
Yeah, it was a massive paradigm shift. It proved that robotics had finally, escaped the industrial lab and entered the everyday living room. It kicked off this modern gold rush.
But it also exposed a really massive problem, right? Millions of people suddenly wanted to build a home robot, and absolutely nobody knew where to start.
Oh, exactly. Everyone was completely lost.
Which is exactly our mission for today's deep dive. We are exploring a fascinating, incredibly comprehensive guide written by a creator who threw themselves completely into the deep end to solve that exact problem for you.
And they really went all in. They spent 6 months, they dropped around $2,000, and they built three entirely different home robots, making pretty much every mistake in the book along the way.
Also, they could figure out the exact blueprint for how anyone, including you listening right now, can build a smart, functioning AI robot for your house today.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it really answers the question of why now? Like, why is 2026 the golden year for DIY robotics?
Yeah, because people have been promising us home robots for, what, decades?
Right. But it's not just a coincidence that it's happening now. It's really the collision of three massive technological shifts. First, the 3D printer price crash.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge one.
Just a few years ago, a machine capable of producing structural, reliable robot parts would cost you a minimum of $2,000. But today, manufacturing has scaled up so efficiently that a machine like the Creality Ender 3v3 offers incredible quality for just $300.
That is basically the cost of a decent microwave.
It really is. And the second shift is the democratization of AI. If you're listening to this and thinking, I have absolutely no idea how to code a neural network, well, the beautiful part is that you don't have to.
Thank goodness, because I definitely don't know how to do that.
Most people don't.
Yeah.
But powerful AI models like Google's Gemini Flash and OpenAI's GPT-4o, they're publicly available via APIs.
And for anyone who doesn't know, APIs are essentially like digital cell phone plans that allow your local hardware to dial up a supercomputer in the cloud, right?
Exactly. They do all the heavy lifting remotely, and they charge literal pennies per conversation. And then the third factor is pocket computing power. A Raspberry Pi 5 costs about $80, but it packs the processing punch of a full desktop computer from a decade ago.
But before we get totally swept up in the magic of it all, I do feel like I need to put up some guardrails here. Because the author of our guide is honestly brutally honest about the reality of this.
Oh, yeah, they do not sugarcoat it.
Not at all. This project is not for the faint of heart. Their very first robot was an unmitigated disaster. I mean, they got way overambitious, bought top-of-the-line complex gear they didn't even understand, and wasted $1,500.
And after 3 agonizing months of trying to put it together, all they had managed to do was make a single LED light blink.
Just one blinking light for $1,500.
So, yeah, building a working robot takes a realistic timeline of 2 to 6 months. It's a real journey of troubleshooting. I mean, you will print the wrong parts, your code will inevitably throw errors, and you will definitely have moments of intense frustration.
But if you're the kind of person who loves dissecting how things work, and you want that payoff of bringing an actual intelligent machine to life in your home, this is your blueprint. So let's start at the foundation.
Right, the physical shell.
Exactly. Before your robot can think, it needs a body. And your very first decision dictates your budget, your assembly speed, and honestly, your sanity levels. And that is choosing your 3D printer.
So the author lays out three distinct paths for the reader here. First is the beginner path, which totals around $800. You use that $300 Ender 3v3 printer we mentioned, a simple Raspberry Pi 4, and Gemini Flash for the AI brain.
Which gives you a pretty basic robot that can move and handle simple tasks, right?
Right. Then there's the intermediate path, which runs around $2,000. Here you upgrade to a Prusa MK4 printer, a Raspberry Pi 5, and Claude 3.5. And this is actually the author's highly recommended sweet spot.
Okay, good to know. And the third option?
The third is the Pro Path at $5,000, utilizing a massive Prusa XL printer, an industrial-grade Jetson Orin nanocomputer, and a hybrid AI system.
Okay, I really want to dig into this printer battle because the author's specific experiences here are so telling. They started on that budget-friendly Ender 3v3, and look, $300 is a total steal, but they realized the hidden cost is your time.
Your time and your patience.
Definitely your patience. They spent 3 full weeks just trying to understand how to level the print bed, which basically means calibrating the exact microscopic distance between the hot nozzle and the glass so the plastic actually sticks to it instead of just turning into a mess.
Yeah, budget printers are fantastic teachers, yeah. But they force you to become a mechanic before you can become a creator.
And on top of that, they noted it sounds like an angry, rattling old refrigerator in your workspace while it's running. But then they contrast it with the Bamboo Lab P1S, which is $699.
The Bamboo is just a completely different beast.
It is. They described its printing speed as demonic-like, 500 millimeters per second. To put that in perspective, the author had a friend who printed an entire robotic hand on the Bamboo in just 18 hours. The author tried that exact same file on their budget Ender 3, and it took 4 torturous days.
Wow. 4 days versus 18 hours. The physical speed of the machine completely changes the iteration cycle of the whole project.
Okay, but this is where I get a little confused. If the Bamboo is basically a sports car that can spit out a robot hand in under a day, why in the world did the author ultimately choose to drop $1,099 on the significantly slower Prusa MK4 for their intermediate build? Like, why pay way more money to go slower?
It's a brilliant observation, actually, and it all comes down to the mechanics of how 3D prints fail. See, when a printer's running for 40 hours straight, if the internal belt slips by even a single millimeter, every subsequent layer is printed in the wrong spot.
Oh, no. So it just builds on the mistake.
Exactly. We call it layer shifting. A 40-hour print instantly turns into a modern art disaster of tangled plastic spaghetti.
That sounds infuriating.
It is. The Prusa MK4 might be slower, but it has a 95% plus success rate. It has these incredible sensors that constantly monitor the exact physical resistance on the tool head, so it compensates for minor errors in real time.
Okay. So it's not about top speed. It's about finishing the race without crashing your car into the wall.
Precisely. When you're undertaking a multi-month project, printing dozens and dozens of interconnected parts, a printer that fails 20% of the time will completely destroy your motivation. The author bought the Prusa and said the difference was staggering.
Right, because the first print succeeded, the 100th print succeeded.
Exactly. You're buying reliability, which saves your sanity. Time is money.
That makes total sense. So, okay, you've got your ultra-reliable machine to build the body, but a titanium-strong robot is completely useless if it's built out of the wrong stuff.
Which brings us to the actual science of filaments. And the author made a brutal $200 mistake right out of the gate here.
Yes. The classic PLA trap. Okay, let's unpack this. They printed their entire first robot out of standard PLA plastic because, you know, it's the cheapest and easiest filament to work with. But within 2 weeks, the physical weight of the robot just caused the joints to snap.
Because PLA is super brittle.
Right. And even worse, the plastic parts sitting directly adjacent to the motors actually melted and warped. So that was 60 hours of printing and $200 of material totally ruined.
This happens all the time to beginners because every plastic has a highly specific thermal and mechanical threshold. PLA doesn't bend, it just breaks under stress. And crucially, it has a glass transition temperature of about 60 degrees Celsius.
Meaning that's the temperature where it stops being solid and starts getting soft and gooey, right?
Right. And motors in a robot, especially under a heavy load, generate a lot of heat. They can easily surpass 60 degrees.
So the author had to pivot and do some serious matchmaking between the robot's anatomy and the chemistry of the different plastics. For the outer shell like the face, the decorative chest plates, they kept using PLA because it looks great and doesn't bear any weight.
Makes sense. It's perfect for cosmetics.
But what about the actual skeleton? They needed something tough.
For the structural skeleton, the absolute workhorse they found is a plastic called PTG. The author used it for about 70% of the robot. The joints, the load-bearing brackets. PVG survives up to 80 degrees Celsius, but its real superpower is that it flexes slightly under physical pressure.
So instead of snapping under the weight of an arm movement, it just sort of absorbs the shock.
Exactly. But to your earlier point, if those motors are getting hotter than 60 or 70 degrees, PTG still seems a little risky for the mounts holding the motors directly in place.
Yeah, that seems like it would still melt eventually.
And it is a risk. Stepper motors, which are the specific type of motors robots use for really precise movement, generate an immense amount of heat. They draw constant electrical current to hold their magnetic position, even when they are just standing completely still.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't have guessed they heat up while standing still.
Oh, yeah. So to bracket those motors, the author had to use ABS plastic. ABS is just pure structural power. It can withstand 100 degrees Celsius without breaking a sweat, but, and this is a big but it comes with a major physiological cost.
Right, the toxic fumes. The author tried printing ABS in a closed room for 8 hours and suffered a terrible headache. Like, you absolutely have to ventilate your room or use an enclosed printer with a heavy-duty air filter if you're going to use ABS.
Yeah, it's completely non-negotiable for safety.
Yeah.
And then once they had the skeleton sorted, they ran into a mobility issue.
Let me guess, the wheels.
The wheels. They initially printed the robot's wheels out of PLA. But hard plastic on a hard tile floor offers zero friction. The robot just spun its wheels like it was stuck on ice. The mechanical solution they found was TPU, which is a highly flexible, rubber-like filament. It gave the tires the perfect grip.
Okay, but the detail from this section that absolutely blew my mind was about the gripper hand. The author wanted a hand that could open and close 10,000 times without a single microscopic fracture. So they chose this ultra-strong nylon. But there was a massive mechanical catch.
Nylon acts like a sponge.
Yes. It absorbs microscopic moisture directly from the ambient air in your room.
And moisture is the absolute enemy of 3D printing. When that wet filament hits a 250-degree nozzle, the water inside instantly boils into steam. It literally creates tiny microscopic explosions inside the plastic as it's being laid down.
Which completely ruins the internal structural integrity. So to solve it, the author literally went to the store, bought a cheap $30 food dehydrator, and baked the spools of nylon for hours to suck all the moisture out before feeding it into the printer.
That is such a clever hack.
And it worked beautifully. The hand actually survived the 10,000 movements. It really reminds me of baking, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't use delicate, airy cake flour to make a heavy, dense pizza crust. Every single part of this robot's anatomy demands a highly specific chemical recipe.
I love that analogy. And to build on it, temperature is everything. If your oven, or in this case, the electrical motor, gets up to 70 degrees, your cake flour PLA is going to turn right back into batter.
Okay, so the author finally has a physical shell that won't snap, it won't slip, and it won't melt. But right now, it's just a really cool-looking plastic statue standing in the corner of their living room. They had to wake it up. They had to give it a brain.
This is where things get really fascinating.
Yeah, but here's where it gets really interesting financially, too, because this is where the API cost track caught them completely off guard. Everyone assumes that because chatting with an AI on a consumer website is basically free, powering a robot with one will be free, too.
It's such a common misconception.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you build a robot, you aren't using the consumer website. You're using the developer API. You are essentially renting raw server space in a massive data center by the millisecond, and you're paying for every single word the robot hears and speaks.
And the author found that out the hard way. They spent a massive $180 in their very first month just letting the robot run before they figured out how to aggressively hack that cost down to just $42 a month.
So how do they do it?
Well, they looked at the three big players, Claude, Gemini, and GPT-4o, and realized each one processes data in fundamentally different ways.
What's fascinating here is how you can leverage those distinct architectural strengths to save money. Let's look at Claude 3.5 Sonnet, for example. It's relatively pricey at around $30 to $50 a month for moderate use, but Claude is the absolute master of logical reasoning and multi-step planning.
So how does that translate to a robot?
Well, the author coded a scenario where the robot has only 15% battery left, but it receives a high-priority task from the user. Claude is sophisticated enough to analyze the variables and actually reason. Okay, the task will take 5% battery. I'll execute the task first and then immediately navigate to the charging dock.
Wow. So it's actually weighing the physics of the real world, not just spitting out a pre-programmed text response?
Precisely. Now, contrast that with Google's Gemini 1.5 Flash. This is the cheap speed demon of the group. costing around maybe $3 to $10 a month.
And why is it so much cheaper but still useful?
Its core mechanism is that it's natively multimodal. It digests raw video, audio, and text simultaneously at blazing speeds. The author uses Gemini for physical world interpretation. So the robot literally looks through its camera, processes the visual feed of an open refrigerator, identifies the empty shelf, and says out loud, "The milk is out, I'm adding it to the grocery list."
That is just sci-fi level contextual awareness right there. And then there's OpenAI's GPT-4o, which is the most expensive at around $45 to $70 a month.
Right, but GPT-4o possesses the most natural conversational cadence and emotional intelligence. The author relies on it exclusively to give the robot its personality.
Yeah, they use it to wake them up with a joke, tell stories at night, and adjust its tone to be comforting when the author is feeling stressed.
But wait, I have a question. If GPT-4o charges by the interaction, and Claude is expensive too, how do you drop a $180 bill to $42? I mean, wouldn't the robot bankrupt you just by standing in the living room constantly checking the time or looking around to see if anyone is in the room?
You would think so. The author must have found a way to stop it from pinging the cloud for every tiny sensory input, right?
Exactly. You've hit on the exact solution they used. Local processing and caching. You have to design a hybrid system. If the robot just needs to know if a human walked into the room, you don't send a continuous video feed to a supercomputer.
That would cost a fortune.
It would. Instead, the author uses a free local software library called OpenCV. It runs directly on the robot's tiny internal computer, mathematically scanning the camera pixels just to detect the geometric shape of a face. It costs $0.
Oh, that's brilliant. So you use the free local software to notice the human, and only then do you wake up the expensive cloud API to figure out what to say to them.
You got it. They route 70% of basic daily tasks to the ultra-cheap Gemini. They reserve the expensive Claude exclusively for deep, complex problem-solving. And they only tag in GPT-4o about 10% of the time for heavy socializing.
That is such a smart division of labor.
And furthermore, they use a mechanism called caching. If you ask the robot the weather, it asks the API, pays the fraction of a cent, and then saves that data to its local hard drive. If you ask again 20 minutes later, it just reads its own hard drive. It doesn't pay an AI just to know what time it is.
Okay, so we have the cloud-based brain operating efficiently, and we have the physical body built and perfectly balanced. But how do those two realms actually bridge? You know, you need a nervous system.
You absolutely do.
You need the physical hardware buried inside the plastic that takes the cloud's brilliant thoughts and turns them into physical voltage to move a plastic arm.
And this requires a very specific division of labor between the computer chips inside the robot. We have to separate the brain from the spinal cord. The central onboard computer handles the API connections and processing heavy sensory data.
And the author found out pretty quickly that you cannot cheap out on this part. A standard $75 Raspberry Pi 4 is an amazing tiny computer, but it lacks dedicated processing cores for complex visual data. The author found it took a painful 5 seconds for the Pi to process an image and recognize a face.
Which completely shatters the illusion of intelligence,
yeah,
right? A 5-second delay makes it feel like a broken toy.
Totally. But when the author upgraded to the NVIDIA Jetson Orin Nano, which is a $500 piece of hardware, the game totally changed. The Jetson has dedicated GPU cores built specifically for parallel AI processing. That facial recognition time dropped from 5 seconds to 0.1 seconds.
That is a massive leap.
It is. It can process the visual data in real time across 3 cameras simultaneously. But here's the crazy part. Even with a $500 Jetson brain, it still cannot safely spin the robot's wheels on its own.
Correct. And that's because the Jetson runs an operating system, like Windows or Mac. Operating systems are designed to juggle hundreds of background tasks. If the Jetson is commanding a motor to move an arm, and suddenly it decides it needs to update a Wi-Fi driver in the background, it might pause the motor command for a tenth of a second.
And in robotics, a tenth of a second delay means the robot doesn't stop in time and punches a hole straight through your drywall.
Exactly. So the Jetson is the frontal lobe. It's doing the heavy thinking, talking to the cloud, recognizing the geometry of the room. But it needs an Arduino Mega, which is a simple $40 microcontroller, to act as the spinal cord.
Right, because the Arduino doesn't have a complex operating system, does it?
No, it just runs a raw loop of electrical reflexes, taking a simple move arm command from the Jetson and translating it into perfect uninterrupted voltage for the motors.
So the Jetson or Raspberry Pi is the frontal lobe doing the heavy thinking, and the Arduino is the spinal cord handling the reflexes and muscle twitches. That is such a cool way to build it.
It really is.
Yeah.
And to give that frontal lobe raw data to process, the author had to install specialized sensory organs. For hearing, they used a $25 ReSpeaker 4-mic array. Because it has four distinct microphones, it operates a lot like human ears.
How so?
It calculates the microsecond difference between when a sound wave hits the left mic versus the right mic, mathematically pinpoints your exact location in the room, and physically rotates the robot's head to make eye contact with you when you speak.
That is just so cool. And for vision, they didn't just slap a cheap webcam on it either. They used a $200 Intel RealSense depth camera.
Because a regular webcam only sees in 2D.
Right. Instead of just taking a flat picture, the RealSense physically fires out an invisible grid of infrared dots across the entire room. It measures how long it takes those dots to bounce back to the lens, essentially mapping the physical 3D depth of the room in real time.
That's how the robot knows the coffee table is exactly 3 feet away and doesn't just confidently drive straight into it.
It creates a literal topographical map of its environment. But of course, marrying all these sensors, the cloud brains, the motors, and the plastic parts together resulted in some deeply humbling assembly nightmares for the author.
Oh, I'm sure. I can only imagine.
Their top 10 mistake list is basically a masterclass in trial and error. My absolute favorite physics fail. They spent weeks designing this gorgeous outer shell, finally got the heavy lithium battery integrated, but they mounted that heavy battery right at the top of the robot's head.
Oh, no. The center of gravity.
Exactly. It was so incredibly top-heavy that the very moment the robot tried to roll forward, it immediately face-planted onto the floor.
A very harsh lesson in weight distribution.
Truly. Or the electrical oversights. They spent hours meticulously wiring the Arduino spinal cord, but decided to skip installing a tiny $5 electrical fuse just to save some time.
Let me guess. A short circuit.
Yeah, a single accidental short circuit instantly fried the entire Arduino board, literally melting the circuits.
Which perfectly illustrates why the author emphasizes that realistic timeline we talked about earlier. You aren't going to build this over a long weekend with a cup of coffee. It is a 2 to 3 month grind of designing, printing, soldering, testing, failing, and rewiring.
It demands serious resilience. So, what does all of this mean for you if you're listening and feeling that itch to start ordering parts right now? The author ends the guide by sharing a really profound emotional payoff.
The creator's high.
Yes. 4 months prior, they were a total beginner. They had melted plastic, fried motherboards, and surprisingly high API bills. But they pushed through it. And now, they have a physical entity in their living room. It makes them coffee. It recognizes their face when they walk in. It tells them a joke.
The author actually says all the pain and frustration of troubleshooting just vanishes the very first time this machine, which you built from scratch with your own hands, looks you in the eye and says good morning.
It's amazing. You are taking raw digital code and manifesting it into physical interactive reality.
But, you know, the author's success raises a deeply compelling question, one that lingers long after you've finished reading their guide. We discussed how they utilized GPT-4o specifically to give the robot a comforting, emotionally resonant personality.
Right. And it works really well for them.
But if we are now entering an era where anyone with a 3D printer and an internet connection can physically manifest a highly customized AI personality into their living room, a machine designed to read our moods, make eye contact, and actively comfort us when we're stressed, at what point do we stop treating these creations as mere home appliances?
Oh, wow. Wait, that's heavy.
Think about it. When does it transition from being a cool DIY tech project to something we develop a genuine, deep emotional attachment to, almost like a roommate or a companion? We are rapidly blurring the line between a pre-programmed script running on a circuit board and an entirely new, unprecedented kind of artificial relationship.
It's incredible to think about. We started this deep dive talking about how advanced robotics used to be locked away in pristine, sterile labs. But the reality of the future is so much messier and, honestly, so much more beautifully human. It's happening right now in cluttered apartments with food dehydrators, tangled wires, and melted plastic, where a pile of 3D printed parts is slowly learning how to become a friend.